young people share their stories, they can change the world. But some youth voices still go unheard. Join me, Janessa Fisher.
And me, Brian Johnson, for this youth-led monthly interview series as young people tell their untold stories of experiences with homelessness, foster care, disabilities, teen parenting, and more.
Each conversation will uncover stories of hope, strength from our youth storytellers who want to share the best ways that we can all support youth in similar situations as theirs. If you want to know how to do better for youth or simply just be inspired, this is your show. Every youth has a story to tell.
Are you ready to listen?
And welcome back to Youth Voice Amplified, the podcast where every youth is heard and every voice matters. I'm your host, Janessa.
And I'm Brian.
November is Homeless Youth Awareness Month. November was first declared National Homeless Youth Awareness Month in 2007, and since then, November has been a time to acknowledge those families and children experiencing homelessness. As many as 2.5 million youth per year experience homelessness.
Along with losing their home, community, friends, and routines as well, as their sense of stability and safety, many homeless youth are also victims of trauma. While trying to survive on the streets, youth are exposed to countless dangers with an increased likelihood of substance abuse, early parenthood, impulsivity, depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, and a vulnerability of being trafficked.
Which is why it's so important to have an awareness month to bring light to these often quiet issues. Not only that, but to bring more support to youth who are experiencing homelessness, especially school-aged youth.
This episode, we would like to shed light on our school-age youth who are facing homelessness and how these students are eligible for educational rights and protections under the federal law called the McKinney-Veno Act.
For those who don't know, this act was the first federal law to directly impact the education of students experiencing homelessness and was enacted in 1987 as a part of the Stuart B. McKinney Homeless Assistant Act. Under the McKinney-Veno Homeless Assistant Act, homeless children and youth, meaning individuals who lacked a fixed, regular, and adequate nighttime residence and includes children and youth staying in shelters or transitional housing, living in motels, hotels, cars, or temporary shared housing with others due to loss of housing.
And the goal of the McKinney-Veno Homeless Assistant Act is to ensure that children and youth, including preschoolers, who are experiencing homelessness, have equal access to the same free, appropriate additional programs as their peers.
In honor of Homeless Youth Awareness Month, we are joined by two amazing guests who are true leaders in the field of providing critical services to students facing homelessness. Homeless Education Liaison Michelle Blaylock and a Registered Associate Clinical Social Worker Gabby Britt from the Kern High School District.
The Kern High School District is no ordinary school district. Located in Kern County at the southern end of California's San Joaquin Valley, it is the largest high school district serving over 42,000 students. It also encompasses about 3,500 square miles. That's about 43% of the total area in Kern County.
This is why it's important to have Michelle and Gabby join us for Homeless Youth Awareness Month to help shed light on the pressing needs and challenges faced by homeless youth in schools who often go under the radar.
They share their insights and experiences in making a difference in the lives of homeless youth, along with what their roles are like and how they ensure homeless students receive their support. They need to excel academically and thrive despite their challenges. Now, please enjoy our conversation with Michelle Blaylock and Gabby Britt.
Michelle and Gabby, welcome to Youth Voice Amplified. We are so happy to have you on.
Thank you. So nice of you to invite us, and so glad to be here.
Hello. So good to be here today.
Thank you for being here.
As we love our icebreaker questions here. And first up, I'm going to do Michelle. What is your favorite Thanksgiving dish?
I would have to say mashed potatoes would be my favorite dish.
Is there a reason why? Or is it just
it's
something
just, new? Well, Gabby and I are both vegetarian, so, you know, no turkey here.
Valid.
So, yeah.
Just something simple.
Just a childhood favorite, still delicious.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. And Gabby, does your family have a Thanksgiving tradition? And if so, what is it?
So every Thanksgiving, we all pick names out of a hat, and each person has to go down the line and share something that they're thankful for or something that has been very meaningful to their life over the past year. So that is something that we do.
Oh, that's a sweet
That's
one.
A good tradition. Yeah, it's very nice. I like that one.
I've never heard of that.
As always, I would like to ask you both our signature question. What does youth voice mean to you?
To me, it just means listening to the youth, posing questions, trying to get input, hearing what youth have to say.
To me, it is about resilience, seeing students who have gone through a number of adversities and have been able to come through and do amazing things with their life.
For our listeners, could you explain what the McKinney-Vento Act is and what is its significance in the context of supporting homeless students?
So the McKinney-Vento Act supports youth who are experiencing unstable living conditions. So students who do not have a fixed, regular, and adequate nighttime residence have certain rights. It was created for school stability, to remove educational barriers. And so Gabby and I provide support, I as the liaison, and then Gabby as the social worker.
Could you touch on the term fixed for exactly for sure. those people who's not too sure what that
right.
means?
Right. So fixed, regular, and adequate, I can go a little bit more into what that might mean. So fixed means not moving. So they're not in an RV, for example, or a car. And regular just means same place every night, some place that they can go every single night. It's consistent. And adequate would be it meets all their emotional and physical needs. So, for example, they have running water, they have electricity, it's not infested with vermin, it's not overcrowded. So examples of residents that might not meet this definition of fixed, regular, and adequate would include a hotel or a motel. A lot of times we have families in shelters or doubled up, many, many in doubled up situations where they can't afford to get a place of their own. They're not able to secure permanent housing, and so they're living with family or friends temporarily, couch surfing. And then, of course, we have some families that may be in their car, in a tent, unsheltered.
Thank you for defining that for our listeners.
Michelle and Gabby, can you talk about your collaboration together and how you support the homeless community?
So the beauty of how we work together is that Michelle has such a strong and rich history in working in the education system. So she really knows educational laws and the rights of the students and is able to link the students with any supportive services related specifically to their academia and being able to graduate on time and get all of their courses completed. Whereas I have a strong history in social work, so I am able to work alongside the students in meeting their basic needs. So a lot of what I do is support students and families in either finding housing, getting food, accessing clothing or school supplies, or even some social emotional support. So really encompassing all the other life areas that a student needs assistance with.
So you guys really go hand in hand with collaboration. I love that.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm more in the office working on compliance, coordinating trainings, coordinating. We have site liaisons at each site. And so I coordinate the services between the sites and the district. And then Gabby is more boots on the ground, working directly with the students, providing direct supports to the students and their families.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Definitely a dynamic duo.
Yes.
Can we get both of you to briefly share your background and what motivated you to work with homeless youth?
So I started out in education. I was a teacher, enjoyed the working with students aspect as much as the actual teaching part. So I ended up going into school counseling and had a lot of satisfaction. And I found it very rewarding to work with foster and homeless youth. And so I was always hoping that I would have an opportunity to have a greater role in that area. I worked at the district office in another area, and this position came up when the previous liaison retired. And so it was just a great opportunity to step into this position. It's been great.
So I actually worked in behavioral health for about 22 years before coming over to the Kern High School District. So I was able to work with children and youth who were experiencing various mental health issues. And it just so happened that I ended up completing my master's in social work program, and this opportunity to work at the Kern High School District came up. When I initially heard about the position, I was a little hesitant because I'd never specifically worked with that population of students before, but it has been an absolutely, truly life-changing experience in seeing the number of different situations that students and their families experience within Kern County and having the opportunity to support those students.
Just going back real quick, how long have you been working in education?
I have been working in education for about 25 years.
That is a lot of...
It's a lot of years.
Was it always in Kern County?
Or? It was always in Kern County and always for the Kern High School District.
Wow.
Yeah. East High, Foothill, and the district office. That's the background.
That's amazing. Yeah. I would like to ask you both. I know you guys kind of already defined like the homeless student under the McKinney-Vento Act, but can you define unaccompanied homeless youth under the McKinney-Vento Act?
Sure. So an unaccompanied youth is just a youth who is not with a parent or legal guardian. An unaccompanied homeless youth is an unaccompanied youth who also meets the definition of McKinney-Vento by not having a fixed, regular, and adequate nighttime residence.
Thank you for clarifying that once again.
Greatly defined.
What is the importance of these definitions in recognizing and aiding students experiencing homelessness?
Well, I think the definitions are important just so there's a common understanding of what we're looking for. And so we can train staff. Staff can be aware if they encounter a student who's experiencing some of these situations that meet the definition, that they notify the correct people. You have anything to add?
You explained it eloquently.
What are some of the most common challenges you observe among homeless youth in your district? And how do you and your team address these challenges specifically?
From my perspective, and I know yours is different because you're so much more on the ground, we find it challenging to provide transportation. One of the rights of a McKinney-Vento youth is to stay at school of origin. So we want school consistency for these students. And so it's a challenge to sometimes arrange for that transportation. They've experienced trauma. They've experienced hardship, adversity, and they may not have anything else consistent in their life. So we really want to make sure that we have given them the opportunity to stay at their school, especially if they've established connections. So that is a challenge. Sometimes we, with best intentions on everyone's part, have them at school of origin, and then transportation maybe takes a really long time. It's a little bit of a, I don't want to say a barrier, but it can be not the best situation.
I would agree to that. I think one of the biggest challenges for us is transportation and really trying to support the students in maintaining their educational stability and finding opportunities to also work with them and figuring out how they can continue to focus on their education while also experiencing so many number of things that are going on within their life.
Having their basic needs met, you know, when they're worried about really bigger issues than education,
yes.
Trying to, you know, for us, of course, we're in education. Education's important. But for them, they may be experiencing many other needs that have priority.
And I like that you recognize that. A lot of homeless youth feel like they are unrecognizable in that, and that a lot of teachers and school staff don't really realize that I'm not worried about my homework. I'm worried about my next place to sleep. So I like that you guys most definitely have that in your mind. Why do you think students are sometimes not identified as homeless?
Oh, so many reasons. Part of it is perhaps embarrassment, shame, the stigma of being homeless. So I would say that isn't, they don't come forward to the school and share their situation. They might not be aware, as much as we try and spread the word, they may not be aware of McKinney-Vento, that they have certain rights and that we have a program that can help them. Mm-hmm. So they may not know, they may not see themselves as homeless. So they might meet the definition of McKinney-Vento, yet they have a roof over their heads. It's a different roof every night, but it's a roof over their heads, so they don't consider themselves to be homeless. So I think that is a big reason. Also, staff's understanding of McKinney-Vento. So perhaps they might hear something, the student might say something, and the staff doesn't recognize that that student qualifies for McKinney-Vento. And there are so many with the definition, there's a little bit of gray area a lot of times. And so the understanding of staff when it comes to the definition of McKinney-Vento, what are you seeing?
For sure. I would agree completely with everything you said, especially in regards to the potential stigma of someone knowing that the student may be experiencing some housing instability, especially within some school sites. I feel like that's more of an issue than at other school sites where kids are nervous or worried about sharing their experience because they're worried that somebody may not be supportive or understanding of what they're going through.
Yeah, I've had families on more than one occasion, one this year, call and explain their situation and say, we didn't want to let you know. You know, my daughter is horrified and embarrassed by the situation. She doesn't want staff to know that I need the support. And so I'm reaching out to you. I just have to. So, you know, it's really sad when you hear that.
Do you find that a lot of families are worried about CPS being involved?
I would say yes more to that since my title is social worker.
Yeah,
so the minute they hear the word social worker, they immediately think of CPS. And sometimes I have to tell students when I meet with them at a school site, you're not in trouble. No, everything's okay. So they recognize that I am there just as a support person who wants to do anything I can. And that also does come, yes, whenever we have had some phone calls or called some families to follow up with them about their student. Sometimes before I even have the opportunity to share how much support the school district wants to give them, they immediately ask, am I in trouble? Are you calling CPS? So forth and so on. So
and a lot of times I notice when there are younger children in the family, I think they may have more fear of CPS.
Mm-hmm. In those situations and you supporting these students, do they have any resistance like trying to accept these services that you're trying to provide?
I would say that's pretty few and far between. There are some families who have blatantly come out and said, we do not want any support. We are okay on our own. Whereas the majority are willing to take the support that we give them.
And a lot of times it's the support of just, I can stay at my school and I don't have to transfer because I'm living in a different home. I think that's the support that most are very willingly accept. There are a few families that say, I do not want to participate in this program. But like you said, it's few and far between.
Right.
Tying in Homeless Youth Awareness Month, I would like to ask you both, why is Homeless Youth Awareness Month important in shedding light on homeless students?
Coming from a completely other agency and even working within the children's system of care, working at school sites, working with children, I had no idea how many students were experiencing homelessness. And I truly did not really know much about homelessness within children and youth populations. So I think it is so very important for the word to get out because I truly believe that many, many people do not even recognize that this is something that is going on. When they think of the word homeless, the picture that comes in their brain is the person that they see on the street, you know, driving down Chester Avenue, for example, or something. They do not see the small children and the high school age students who are also experiencing those exact same things.
And like you mentioned earlier, they feel maybe like they're not being seen, not being heard. And I think it's important to talk about their situation so that we can respect their opinions and get their, you know, input on their situation and hear what's going on.
For our listeners also, you don't have to answer if you don't want to, but can you give a context on like how many students probably within your district may be identified as homeless youth?
Last year we had 841. This year so far, where are we?
At about 360.
And this is still
the beginning of the year.
Yeah, the beginning of the year. So I would expect us to be even higher than 841. Really, based on what experts say, we should have 5 to 10% of free reduced lunch students identified as McKinney-Vento. So even though we are continuing to grow, we're still probably likely under identifying students. We should have more like 1,000 to 1,500 students.
Wow. And how big is the district in total so they can get an idea since you said about close to 1,000
students? 43,000-ish, somewhere in there.
When we talked about being underidentified, do you feel like that stigma of homelessness and what everybody thinks of is a big barrier for those youth coming up and saying, hey, I need the resources?
I would definitely say so. I think the word homeless carries a very negative connotation to it for many people. So often what Michelle and I try to do is ensure that we use verbiage that shares that we understand that they may be experiencing some type of housing instability or housing insecurity at this time. So I definitely think that is an issue.
Thank you. Could you walk us through what a typical day in the life looks like for both of you?
What would be a typical day? I mean, a typical day for me might be fielding a lot of phone calls. So I do provide a lot of support. I help out school sites when questions come up about how to identify homeless families or youth. So a lot of phone calls, a lot of support to school sites. Students have the right to graduate with the minimum state requirements if they meet other criteria, McKinney-Vento students. And so we have a contract. So I spend a lot of time reviewing those to see if students qualify, maybe arranging training, working with our student liaison at the school site to provide some opportunities for field trips and activities. And I'm also the foster liaison, so I do spend a good portion of my day doing that as well. You know, Gabby spends her entire day on McKinney-Vento, and her day is much more interesting than mine.
Some interesting, more interesting than others, definitely. So I am the person who's usually more out and about, going to various school sites, checking with the school site liaisons to ensure that they have everything that they need to meet the needs of their students. Some school sites, I meet with students just to check in with them, see how they're doing, and if they need any additional support. Some school sites have very high numbers of McKinney-Vento youth, whereas other school sites have less students. I also do home visits. I am very closely connected with the truancy and outreach team. I guess you could say I'm kind of part of that team as well. It's recognized that approximately 62 to 63% of McKinney-Vento students are chronically truant. So I work alongside the truancy and outreach team and working to see what students we can try and identify within the community and get them back into school, recognizing they may have a number of obstacles to them attending to school and figuring out how we can support them and getting back into school. So, for example, my day could include going on a home visit to a student's home who has not shown up for school yet this school year due to non-attendance, meeting with that family, recognizing the barriers that are going on within that household, and then supporting them and getting that student to school. A day can also look like getting food baskets, reaching out to community resources. I am sometimes driving around going to various locations like the Hope Center or Compassion Corner or the Pull-Up Pickup Center and trying to make sure that we have those collaborations going so that our students and families can get what they need.
And another part of the day right now, particularly at the beginning of the year, would be arranging transportation and resolving enrollment issues. That's going on quite a bit.
Yeah.
Sounds like you guys both have a lot of responsibilities in your roles and wear many hats, as I'm hearing.
Another thing I've been doing most recently is collaborating with the homeless shelter or the Open Door Network, trying to ensure that each student from the Kern High School District that may be staying there right now is identified so they can receive support from the staff at the Open Door Network, as well as receiving support from the school district. So working together, we can try to make sure that the student has a very holistic approach and is able to meet their basic needs and their educational needs at the same time.
And we interact a lot about different situations. You know, we'll talk them through, you know, what do you think? How would we help this family? Or what do you think about this student being eligible or not eligible? So we have a lot of interaction when Gabby is in the office over different situations.
Yeah.
I just wanted to also touch back. You mentioned the Open Door Network. Can you just briefly explain your collaboration? I know you guys said you collaborate with them. Can you just explain what the Open Network does?
So the Open Door Network has a number of different layers to it. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like it used to be different entities that all came together to provide support for families experiencing domestic violence, families experiencing homelessness, amongst many other things. So just very recently, I was able to work alongside the homeless shelter on Truxton, East Truxton, discussing with them how can we work together to support these mothers and their families, because most of the families staying at that shelter are single mothers with children. And so what can we do to ensure the students have transportation to and from school, that if they are experiencing difficulty completing their schoolwork, they have someone to support them, as well as ensuring that they have everything that they need for school, which could be school supplies, shoes, clothing, so forth and so on.
I like to collaborate. collaboration piece. We keep saying that word, but it's such a big collaboration piece with between the schools, the communities, and other resources. I love that for us.
Yeah, we work with some great organizations. We partner a lot, particularly there's an organization called Lynx that we work with, and they provide support to Kern High School District students, not only McKinney-Vento, but they offer clothing. So they have gently used or new clothing, and Junkatique is another one that's mm-hmm. a great resource where they provide clothing and resources to the whole family, not just the students.
Definitely, because we can have families who, for example, may have had a house fire, so the whole entire family needs support. So Junkatique is able to give each family member an outfit, maybe some items to use, such as blankets or pots and pans, for that family to get back on their feet.
That's wonderful. It sounds like our county collaborates a lot and are just dedicated to helping our students.
And I know I've said this before in other episodes, but I went to Long Beach, me and Brian took a trip to Long Beach, and there we see a lot of non-collaboration where there's like the education's over there and the city's over there and resources over there, and they don't collaborate as well as we do. So I think we're grateful to be in a county that is really about that collaboration and have people willing, like you guys, to be open and more than welcome to reach out to resources that youth and families need.
It takes everyone.
Are there any misconceptions or common misunderstandings about homeless students and unaccompanied homeless youth that you've encountered in your roles?
So I would say a common misconception is that if a parent has a job, they're not homeless. Or maybe a student is experiencing poverty. Well, why don't they qualify for McKinney-Vento? I think there's a lot of misunderstanding about income being a component of McKinney-Vento when it's really about housing instability. And then we also, and I'm sure Gabby could speak to this as well, have a common misconception about if a student who is an unaccompanied youth chooses to leave, maybe because there's some violence in the home, there's something going on, some severe conflict, and they choose to leave. Well, they chose to leave. They're not homeless is a very common misconception.
Definitely. That is one. I would also say that, unfortunately, a misconception is that for the students and the families that education is not important, which is why the student is not attending school, which is absolutely not necessarily the case. The family is just working to ensure that they first meet their basic needs, such as housing, food, clothing, and that's what's most important at this moment. And unfortunately, some people do not see that.
Just to clarify for our listeners, McKinney-Vento is not based off of income, right?
Correct.
So they could have a job. It does not matter.
They could have a job. That's correct. And many of our families have jobs. I mean, mm-hmm. We have families that live in their car where they have jobs. It's absolutely not based on income.
And this is a tough economic time. I don't know if you guys have noticed within Kern County, the rental prices for housing continue to increase and increase. And so many families may have very decent jobs and they just are unable to pay rent as it continues to rise and rise within Kern County.
Or they'll have housing vouchers, but they can't find someone to rent to them. And so they're having to stay in a motel or doubled up.
Mm-hmm. I can definitely attest to that. The prices of the rentals and homes have been going up in Kern County. Some of these prices are definitely unmanageable and going up more than 10% for theirs. So transitioning into advice and proudest moments. What advice do you have for schools, other liaison, and social workers that want to better support homeless students in their communities?
As a social worker, you want to recognize the whole student for who they are, meaning students sometimes will come in thinking, oh, you're just going to be another adult telling me, get to school, do your math homework. We also need to look at what are the student's strengths? What is a student good at? Where does a student feel supported? Who are the people that encourage this student? And what brings meaning or purpose to their life? And sometimes for some high school, even adults, but some high school students, those can be some tough questions to answer. Yet if you're able to tap into those strengths and those resources and even those coping skills, you can help that student see that they are so much more than just showing up to school every day or getting a decent grade on a test. They're a human being that needs a number of supports, and they see that and they appreciate that and they build relationships with that.
So hard to follow that one up. So advice I would give a liaison would be you can't do it alone. One of the things that we do is we have staff at the school sites who are trained in eligibility so that families can be served immediately. If it comes to someone's attention that a student might be experiencing homelessness, they can be identified there. Hiring the social worker was fabulous and has added so much to our program, I think, having a social worker be part of it. It was that missing component, I think. Collaborating, like you said, the word collaboration again, with local agencies, with KCSOS Foster and McKinney-Vento Services. Ask questions. I would say if you are a liaison and you don't know the answer, ask the county, ask your peers, other liaisons, just knowing that there are people out there. There are a lot of resources online that are available, and just stay positive.
I love those answers. I think that a lot of youth that I've met and my personal experience, I think we feel unheard, especially unhoused youth who have experienced homelessness throughout their education. We feel unheard, we feel unseen. But hearing you guys talk about this, it's very full circle moment, because it's like maybe someone did hear me, but it wasn't my experience at the time. Or maybe somebody was listening and I just didn't know that they were listening. So I think it's very good for our youth who are out there who are listening and will listen to this episode and say there was somebody out there that I didn't know per se, but there was somebody listening. What words of wisdom can you offer to homeless students who are facing challenges but are determined to stay in school and graduate?
I would say ask for help. You know, ask your counselor, the school social worker. You know, share your situation. The information shared is confidential, and we just help as needed. So if we don't know what's going on, we can't provide the support. So I would say please just share what you need, and we will do our best to help.
Definitely. And there are so many resources out there and so many amazing programs and opportunities. And for those students who continue to work so very hard despite all of the different barriers or obstacles they experience, there's many unique and amazing programs out there that I have just learned about over the past year that want to do anything they can to support these students in meeting their life goals. So they're not alone. There's people out there. Ask for the help, as you mentioned, and there's wonderful opportunities that will come up.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm glad we have people like you guys who definitely support our homeless students in the most best way possible. Could you share one of your proudest moments or success stories in your roles?
For me, I am always proud when a student that I'm familiar with, that I've worked with in any capacity, goes to college. So I find that to be very rewarding. Or just the little things of having a student or a parent express appreciation for what has happened, or see a change in a student, whether it's attendance or how they feel about themselves based on some supports that we may have been a part of providing.
I would definitely say that getting to watch students graduate, this was my first year and opportunity to watch students who we saw experiencing struggles with getting all their credits and getting to school. And they were able, despite all of that, to graduate and move forward. That is very exciting, because you realize the world continues to have so many opportunities for them. That's a neat experience.
Can you touch on how student voice is so important in this role and in you guys' role?
Well, I think we have to hear what the students have to say. We have to hear what's going on. We have to hear how we can help them, know what they want, know what their goals are. So student voice is very important.
I definitely think it's very important for students to recognize that they're not alone in this situation. Oftentimes when meeting with a student, I let them know that there are other students who are experiencing the exact same thing as they are, or something very similar to what they're experiencing. And the look that they get on their face, like, I am not alone. I'm not the only person dealing with them, is this sense of someone else is dealing with this too. So I am not alone, and I have people who are willing to support me and other people that are experiencing this and getting through this as well.
So in your roles, I understand that this work can be very rewarding, but at other times it can be very demanding. How do you practice self-care to prevent burnout?
So, well, for me, I would say time with family, eating healthy, exercise, a little wine now and again, or not. So just enjoying time with family, doing things outside of the office.
I would agree to enjoying time with family and with friends, going out of town. I've decided that I could probably never move out of California because I go to the beach at least once every month or 2 months just to experience the ocean. Those are my self-care moments for sure.
Thank you.
Any specific beach in general or just any beach?
This is Bakersfield, Central Coast all the way.
This is our signature question, and this is my favorite question, but what are your life mottos?
Mine is super cheesy, but each morning I just try to figure out how I can make this world just a little bit better of a place. The end.
That's nice.
That's not cheesy at all. That's great.
I need to. That's very nice. I like that. Mine is be positive. Very simple. I know.
I feel like that embodies you. I feel like that embodies you, though. I feel like you're very, very positive.
Great life models, by the way.
This has been such an amazing episode. I don't think you understand how fulfilling this was. I came into it with a little bit of low energy, but I really got to see a full circle moment here because you guys are on the other side where I was on the other side. And now I get to see a different role, but I feel like this was very fulfilling and full circle for me. There was almost a time that I was like, oh, I'm going to cry because those are legitimately things that you think about. And those were things that I thought about. I thought this was my only situation as a homeless youth. I was just in that moment and that was all that mattered. And hearing you guys say that you hear the youth and you know that this is not the biggest worry on their plate, it just feels so fulfilling because, I don't know, it heals a little piece of me because I felt like I was never heard. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like youth who are listening are going to get that same feeling.
And I would like to personally thank you both because your two roles are very unique. And I'm not too sure, I can't speak for other districts, but they need at least more of you guys at other districts. I don't know if there are. Don't say me if they are, but they need more of you guys everywhere. So thank you guys.
You guys are like really like just the glue that holds things together, and not everybody will recognize your position and know what it is, but now they will know that there's someone out there that is truly listening and willing and ready to help.
And someone behind the scenes too at that. So.
Truly appreciate that. Really, that's...
Again, thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was such an amazing episode. I know I say that about every episode, but I feel like this one was so needed for our youth out there who haven't felt quite heard.
I like how it also sheds a light on people like Michelle and Gabby and how they, I don't know, they're not really seen, but they do a lot for our homeless students.
Yeah, they're very behind the scenes, but that's like the support we need behind the scenes. And I really want youth to know that they are here and they are very active in their roles, and I'm so excited to have people like this in our county who are willing to collaborate. It is so meaningful that we have people here in our county who are willing to collaborate with communities, education, and just all kinds of different aspects to really bring in the full works for these youth.
And I like how they're, like I said in the podcast, they're a dynamic duo who really shed light on our homeless community and give that support that they so likely need. And I wish there was more of them in other districts. I really do. I'm not too sure, like I said, but I really wish they need that in every district, whether it be elementary, middle school, high school. They need that in every district.
They truly are a work in running full stop. They never stop working. They're always on the go. We've met with them a couple times and they're just always going, and always trying to find the best resources for our youth and their situations. And I feel like that's very rare and it's very appreciated. And even though they do the behind the scenes work, it is so appreciated by the youth. Well, that's it for this episode of Youth Voice Amplified. If you enjoyed what you heard and want to support the show, please take a moment and rate us and leave us a positive review on your favorite podcast player. It'll help us spread awareness to podcasts and find new listeners.
And if you're looking for our show notes or recommended resources for any of our episodes, please visit our website at www.kern.org/YBA. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, or would like to recommend a topic or a guest, you can email us at youthvoiceamplified@gmail.com.
Join us for our next episode when Brian and I sit down with our next youth storyteller. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.
And we out of here.
Youth Voice Amplified is a youth-led project of the Kern County Superintendent of Schools Office, created, produced, and hosted by Janessa Fisher and Brian Johnson, with writing, research, and additional production support by Kim Silva, Allison Baptiste, and the Kern Educational Television Network. Major funding for the Youth Voice Amplified podcast is provided by the Student Achievement and Support Division of the California Department of Education through the Homeless Innovative Program Grant. Thanks for listening.